Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy, Mike. We're back at you one more again, live on a Thursday night, man. I hope everybody's doing good, man. Really looking forward to tonight's show. We're going to have a blast on the cast. We got the homie Matt from K&B Reptiles in the building. But first and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takar. Appreciate everything you do. Y'all make sure y'all show some love in the comments. And don't stop there. Do us a solid and show the channel some love as well. Make sure you hit that like button. If you haven't already subscribed, hit that subscribe button and make sure you hook, smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video here on the channel. Shout out to the audio only gang. Audio recordings of Clutch Conversations are available on all major podcasting platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Make sure when you're checking us out on your favorite podcasting platform to follow, rate, and review. It really helps us out. We appreciate the feedback. We appreciate the support. Speaking of support, if you're involved in this reptile hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, make sure you're supporting US Arc and US Arc Florida. The links for both organizations are in the description of this video. If you're not a member, definitely make sure you go grab your membership and be sure to spread the word about both these organizations that help protect our rights as reptile keepers. We're going to pay some bills real quick with a shout out to the sponsors, and we'll be right back to say what's up.
Baby, won't you listen to me?
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-run business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hognoses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of US Arc, US Arc Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At Armless Angels, it comes to life.
Shout out to the sponsors. Shout out to Shane. Shout out to Justin. Really appreciate the support, fellas. Man, y'all make sure y'all go check them out. Both of them producing some super dope stuff, man. Definitely go follow them on all social media platforms. The links for both sponsors, for all the sponsors, are in the description of this video. So definitely go out, show some love to the sponsors. Let's see who we got in the chat tonight. Done Daughter, what's good, bro? Thanks for coming out. Appreciate the love. Appreciate the support. Eric's More Factory, what's good, bro? Thanks for coming out, fam. 352 in the building. Happy birthday, big homie. Man, y'all make sure y'all show him some birthday love if you haven't already. The homie Brian from Heathen Hatchery. Happy birthday, bro. Blaker's Pythons, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Scales, Fins, and Feathers, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Man, Freddie, what up? What up, fam? The Sultan of Support himself, what's good? Bosa Reptiles in the building. Here's Johnny, what's good? Morph Master Jay in the building. The homie Wiz Constrictors in the building. Again, thanks for coming out. Shout out to the Wiz Tang Clan. Shout out to the V-Unit. Speaking of the V-Unit, we got the General himself in the building. What's good, Emilio? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the love. Benevolent Reptiles, what's good, fam? Thanks for coming out. Appreciate the support. Delray Exotics, appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Let's see who else we got. We got the homie Big Tank Hank in the building. What's good? We're going to stop it right there with the homie Big Tank Hank. We're going to kick the intro, and then we'll be right back. in a second.
Baby, won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer, just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch the shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 93, KMB Reptiles. What's good? What's good, bro? How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I am doing well, man. Fantastically well. Can't complain.
Good, man. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Been looking forward to this, man, all week.
Yeah, man. Your show is one of my favorites, to be honest with you. Not to hype you up too much, but your questions are in depth. They're not just shallow questions. They're not vague. Like, you go in depth with everybody. And I appreciate that, because it's not like the same thing over and over, you know?
I appreciate that, bro. I really appreciate it, man. Yeah, I definitely love to get a chance to talk with people and learn more about them. So I really appreciate you coming on the show. And I'm definitely glad you're enjoying the show as well, man.
Yep.
So real quick, give everybody your elevator pitch. How long you been doing this, your introductions and all that good stuff?
Yeah, man. It pretty much started because when I was a kid, I was obsessed with dinosaurs, and I was probably like 7 or 8, and I was just like hounding my mom to let me get a lizard, and it wasn't anything specific. I just wanted a lizard. And so I finally broke her down. We go to the pet store, and then I have a little sister. And so we ended up going home with 2 guinea pigs right after that, because my sister was off seeing the guinea pigs. And so my mom was just like, oh, we're going to get these, not a lizard. We don't want no reptiles in the house. And it took like another year after that. And then I finally got a crested gecko was the first thing I ever got when I was like 9. And then going into like 5th grade, I really wanted a snake. And it had been like a year I was asking about snakes, just because like, when I got into lizards, it was like they were cool, but I didn't care for like the live, like the insect feeders. I did not like having crickets on hand. I didn't have like dubias. I didn't even know about dubias at the time. So I just had like a cricket colony. I hated that. And so I'm like, snakes, mom, they're like so much more low maintenance. They're cool. They're easy. And it took like a year to get her to agree to get me one. And I got one when I was like 10, and I just got like a normal ball python. And then, I had that one for a couple of years, and then 2011 was when I got my first like morphs. The first things that I had got was from Garrett DeMeyer, and I picked up a, just like everybody else in the beginning, I really wanted to make bumblebees. So nice. I picked up a super pastel male and a spider female, and raised them up for 4 years, and then never bred them. So like I had that was in 2011 when I got those, and then I raised everything up, and then I was kind of like I was a kid. So like, I was just like collecting stuff that I thought was cool. So I had like a handful of Samboas. That was the first thing that I ever bred when I was 16. I bred just a pair of just normal Kenyan Samboas. And then I had like a Mojave ball python. And then, I had like another spider ball python, and then I had like a Hawaii Island boa. So I had just had like a little mismatch of different snakes that I just liked having. And then whenever I went off to school, when I went to college, I sold everything. And that was in 2015. Okay. So like 2014, I was starting to sell everything because I knew I was going to not be able to keep everything with me when I left. And I graduated in 2019, but in 2018, we moved into a house that was like kind of off campus, and the landlord, when I was reading through his notes or something, said no dogs, no cats, anything else contained is okay. So I didn't ask because I was like, anything else that's contained is okay. So I picked up a that Super Pastel that I originally had the mail. I had given that to my my older brother whenever I went off to school. So he still had that. So in my mind, I'm like, I know I would like to breed because I had always wanted to and I never got around to it. And then in like 2017, 2018, before I started actually getting back in, I was like following just like random Facebook pages that were just like showing off ball python morphs. And most of that I was seeing was pieds. And I ended up getting like two snakes in 2018, one of them being an adult female. And then I just went and got my like on a breeder loan from my brother who was just keeping the Super Pastel male as a pet. So my first year breeding was in the fall of 2018, so the clutch was 2019. And I had a Super Pastel male to a pewter female.
Okay.
And then, so that was my intro. And then the next year was the same thing, was just like one clutch. And then I used like a pastel lesser male to a pewter female. So like the first 2 years, 2018 and 2019, was just making like the basic, like show snakes really. And then during that time, 2018 to 2020, I was starting to buy some things here and there. Mostly I was into the pieds.
Okay.
And so 2019, after I had a couple females that I had bought, my like investment purchase was a Pastel DG Pos Het Pied male. And he ended up proving out Het Pied. And then he sired most of the clutches that I had in my like, I guess I'll call it like my breakout year, like 2021, and just made a bunch of like pied het DGs and then a bunch of DG pos het pies. I picked up a proven het DG female from Kittinger just to like kind of increase the amount I was getting in. So that was how I got in. And then I did, so one clutch the first 2 years, the following year I did eight, and then I did 10, and then 2022 I did 11, and then this year I'm pairing up. I've got the potential to pair up 30 females or so, but a lot of those, probably like at least 10 to 12 of those, are first time females. So those are going to be, that's, that ball's in their court on those. But that, yeah, that's the intro. That's how all of it got started.
True. So it sounds like very early on you were kind of like in the breeding mindset. What kind of drew you to that, like, especially early on, like as a young kid?
As a kid, it just seemed fun, honestly. And I was always kind of like a science nerd. And so like in my mind, I'm like, well, if I take this snake that's like yellow and has stripes on it and breed it to this one that has like a blocky pattern that's a lot darker, like what do the offspring look like of that? And whenever I was growing up, I was always the type where it was like, although I probably shouldn't have done it all the time, I would like catch stuff outside and I would keep it for a little bit. I would like study it, like see how it acted, see how it behaved, and then release it. And then we had a family friend who did like animal education type stuff with mostly reptiles. And so he would have different like local type stuff all the time too. And so I was just basically like, it seems like a fun science experiment that other people also enjoy, that's not just specific to me.
Gotcha. So how are you learning about like the breeding process at the time? Or did you like do research on the breeding process at the time?
In the beginning, I don't know what year it would have been, but it was back in the snake bite days where it was, where we had like Chewy on it. So I don't know what year it would have been. But that was when it was all like the sensational, like getting snakes to bite them and stuff. And so I was like learning about breeding through that. And then most of it was just going to like local shows. So there's a show, I'm near Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm in between Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio. And there's a show in Cincinnati that's been there for a long time. And for a while, I would just go just to look at stuff. That's where I got a decent amount of my stuff in the beginning, whenever I was buying in. The first round. And it was really just walking through, and I'm a kid, so I'm walking through and talking to these like older people breeding reptiles just to see like, what are you even doing? And then once I finally like got back in with the mindset of like, okay, I want to get some actual like stock of animals and breed them, by that time we were past like the like the old like forum days, and it was all like Facebook groups and YouTube, and so there was like Mutation Creation. That was when like Miguel was putting out videos. So there was like a ton. Canova was putting out videos, and it was like a ton of information that was like obviously available early on, but you probably had to dig a little bit deeper for it. But now it's just like you can get breeding information just by going on and watching videos.
Gotcha. And so early on, you were in like, yeah, like pod stuff in terms of like your recesses, like pod stuff. You said some desert ghosts. What other recesses were you working with kind of early in the game?
Early on, it was pretty much just pod and DG. So the I told you the that first clutch was like a pewter female, and it was just like basic male type stuff. The first actual like snake that I bought that I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do a project of this, was just a plain pied female that I picked up on Craigslist in 2018. And after that, there was a local person who was selling like a proven female Enchi het pied. And then I had the from Slocky's Serpents, Tim Slocky, I picked up because I joined the Desert Ghost group on Facebook, and I saw him posting there was a it was the Pastel DG Posset Pied, and I was looking at the photos. I'm like, that thing's got a little like track marks on the belly. He's like, I've been watching videos, I know what that is. And
I know all about it.
It was around Thanksgiving, so I messaged him and be like, hey, I'm interested in this male. You know, I'm trying to work some Desert Ghost Pied stuff. It's like, I really like the pieds, and I like the way Desert Ghost does the color. I just joined this group. Can you like, you know, tell me a little bit about these? And so he like explained like the Desert Ghost stuff to me, and showed me some photos of stuff that he had, and I ended up buying that male. And then he also had a female that was a half sibling that was a leopard spot nose, possible 50% double het DG pied. And so I got her hoping that she would prove out head DG, because with spot nose being mostly high white on pies, I'm like, if she's going to prove out one, I hope she proves out head DG. And that's what she ended up proving head DG, but not het for pied. Sweet. So in the beginning, it was all stocking up pieds with the idea of having a male visual desert ghost het pie to run to them and kind of give me a foundation for that project that I needed on to get, you know, raised up in the racks.
So when you were working with DG kind of like early on, what were your thoughts about it in terms of like where that project was going to go? Like, did you kind of have a feeling like it was going to kind of like blow up and be like one of the most more sought after recessives, or were you just working it because you liked it? What were your thoughts on that time? And what was kind of like the general consensus at the time? Cause I wasn't around at that time.
I think that was right around when the popularity like started to pick up really heavy on it.
Okay.
From what I understand, just because it's like, I only probably learned about Desert Ghost when I was like late 2018, early 2019.
Okay.
So that was probably like, if not already on the ascent of it, it was close to it. And I mean, it was $1,000 for the Pastel DG Posset Pod. That was what the price was at that time. It wasn't like the DG craze that we saw during COVID, but I think that was like a slow build, and then COVID popped off and everybody started buying stuff, and it was like, let's go DG. So, I mean, I just saw like only a few DG combos, honestly. And I was just like, the contrast on that is insane.
Yeah.
It's super bright. It looks way better as an adult. Every person that I see talking about it is just like talking about how great they look as an adult. And that's what I'm more interested in. If I'm going to be working with animals and like seeing them every day, I want to see something that looks crazy as an adult, just the same as it does when it's a baby, you know?
100%. That's definitely one of the things I like about DG as well, is just how well it ages. You mentioned the contrast, like all that. That's dope. It's definitely going to be a staple in a lot of my projects moving forward.
I know you're doing the DG clown pied stuff. Is that like your main like DG involvement?
So I'm doing DG clown pied. I actually hit like some crazy stuff like unexpectedly. Like I stumbled onto like some really dope combos. I don't know if I told you or if you heard, but I had a leopard yellow belly Enchi desert ghost het clown male, and I put him to a clown pot female hoping to hatch like visual clown double hits. And that male ended up being het pied as well. And so like I hit like three clown pied combos that were het DG, and like hit like a loaded visual clown, hit a yellow belly pied male that was double hit, hit a loaded triple hit, and then hit like two just like regular triple hits, like a 1.1. Nice. So I was super excited. Like, it was crazy. That's one clutch cutting that I wish I had on camera, because when I cut it, I was like, wait, what? Like, what? Yeah. And then, because at first I could see it was like a pied, but I couldn't see that it was a clown pied until I moved it around. So like, I had like two rushes of excitement. It was nuts.
That's awesome, man. Those are funny surprises, especially when it's a project that you're just trying to think you're just getting like your foundation, like your building blocks on, and then you just jump right past that.
Yeah, I was super excited about that, bro. Super excited. But yeah, I work DG Clown Pod. DG Hypo Clown is another one that I'm working as well.
Nice. I have very little with those. I got two triple het DG Clown Pied females growing up. And then a surprise het. I've got a pastel spot nose Desert Ghost. That's what he started the season as. I thought he might have been blackhead. Blackhead was in the pairing, but spot nose and blackhead being allelic, I thought he looked like some of the spot nose blackhead examples I had seen. But with DG, I didn't know. And then turned out to be just pastel spot nose DG at the beginning of the season. And then I unexpectedly hatch out a bunch that have het pied markers. I'm like, that's weird. And a buddy that had the mom sends me a photo of a DG pied. He was like, I just hatched out a DG pied on accident. Didn't even know the mom was het pied. I'm like, well, that's the mom of my boy. And I'm hatching out a bunch of het pied markers. So I can send in the shed. He's het pied. And then the last two clutches of the year, I go in to check the incubator. And they're supposed to just be like double het DG clowns. And it looks like there's something that kind of looks like a clown head sticking out, and it was Krypton's. So he proved out to be double het cryptic pied in the same season with two hets that I wasn't expecting. But luckily I hatched out a male Krypton Desert Ghost, and he's got het pied markers on him. So I still need to test him, but it's like, I've only got the two females for those triple hits. Like, I kind of want to hatch out a male. That way I don't have to, you know, go buy something just for two females. But that seems like it gave me my male that I needed for those.
Nice. Yeah. Those are great surprises. Like, I'll take those all the time.
Yeah, man.
More of that, please.
Yes. I won't complain.
Like, it's funny. Like, that's one of the fun things about it. Like, it can be a roller coaster sometimes. Like, you might be on a high one day, then a low the next, just in terms of like odds and stuff like that. But that's one of the things that makes it fun, because you don't know what to expect. You don't know what you're going to get. Like, you know what you hope for, but who knows how the odds are going to play out genetically, sex-wise, all that good stuff.
Yeah. And that's what's fun too about like pairing for stuff. This is the first year where I've really got pairings where I don't know exactly what they're going to look like. Like, it's combos that may have not been made before, if not that I haven't seen before. And that's what's the most fun. It's like going back to like the like fun science experiment thing. It's like, what are these are going to look like together? Like, I just want to put two random genes together, see if they look cool. They might not, but if they do, it's like, all right, well, success.
Nice. That's actually a great segue into one of the questions that I wanted to ask you about. Like, I wanted to talk about like when you're hatching out like combos and you're not really sure about what it is. Like, what's your process? Like, are you just like going through Morph Market, like looking at different things that might be similar, you're phoning a friend, like, what do you do?
Yeah, this year, most of my stuff is pretty simple, but whenever I do have like questions on it, the first thing that I'm doing is just, I'm sending it out to like friends that I talk to routinely. And then, or if it's like, I know they work a certain project and it's like, hey, does this have OD in it? Stuff like that. But then I'll go through Morph Market listings and look through and see if it looks similar to stuff on there. But then I'm also in the Patreons for Will Moreau's as well as Bob and Josh.
Okay.
So if I go through and I'm still not like sure about stuff, there's like, they've got channels in their Patreons. I'll post them there, just be like, what do you guys think? And then get people's feedback, because a lot of times people have hashed out similar combos, or they can at least weigh in on what they think it is.
What's probably one of the hardest snakes to ID that you've had so far?
It's probably pied stuff if it's got high white. Because then I'm just looking for like flex of pattern.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then I haven't hatched out a very much OD stuff. So like some of the pies that I hatched out were like POS OD. So I was asking on those too. And it's just because like pies, when they're young, they're bright orange to begin with.
Yeah. 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 It can't be hard to ID some of that pie itself, especially if you're not working with a lot of pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, most of my stuff so far has been pretty, I got my beginning stages where like, I'm just going to build like the foundation and get like, I need that pie head DGs. I need DG head pies. I need DG head clowns. I need clown head DGs. So it's like a lot of my stuff is very simple, cut and dry, at least for the last, you know, 2 years that I've had any real production. So like going forward now is when hopefully I'll have more problems being like, I don't know what this is.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So talk about that a little bit. Talk about your long-term breeding projects and goals.
Yeah. I don't want to say I'm steering away from Pied because I still plan on working plenty of Pied, especially DG Pied and DG Clown Pied. But in the beginning, my mindset was like, I'd be happy just having a room full of Pieds. But then it's like, to a degree, Pied is limiting on what you can do with it. And the more you put in it, the less you're going to see.
Yeah.
So I'm getting to the point now where my idea is like, I'm going to have base recessives, so hypo and DG, and okay, hopefully eventually together. Like I've got double heads, but I don't have like DG Pi or a DG hypo projects yet. And then adding a pattern recessive on top of that. So I'll be working hypo puzzle and DG puzzle. And then I'll be working DG clown and hypo clown. And then like DG Pied and then DG Clown Pied. So right now I don't really have the mindset of being like, I'm going to go for quads and pentas and all that. It's like, I don't have the space for that. I'm doing this like on a low scale. So if I can do a couple projects that are like kind of fine tuned and just use either hypo or DG as a backbone and then throw in pattern recesses on top of that, let that be my foundation. And then once I get the whole idea in the beginning was once I get females that are double visuals, then I can get some crazy males, like even if it's just a really stacked clown. And then I put it to all my hypo clowns and DG clowns. And then that following year, I've got all these crazy clowns that are also head DG and head hypo that I can play with myself.
And just kind of like build on, add on, add on, add on. And then it starts to get more and more powerful. So what's your holdback strategy? Like, are you trying to hold back a lot? Just really kind of depends. Like, what is your holdback strategy?
The last two, so the first year, like my breakout year, when I had the eight clutches, a lot of it was the like the foundation stuff, Pied head DGs, DG head Pied, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
That stuff I stocked up and I kept as all the females except for like two. And it was just like, I'm going to sell two females and I'm going to like break even on what I put into the snake so far. And then I'm going to, you know, I'll feel safe with having all of these growing up behind me. Last year, I probably held back like two snakes, to be honest. And it was just because like the stuff I had was cool, but I didn't have like a long-term plan with it. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I got five snakes that are cool and I'm sure I could use them for something, or I could sell those five snakes, use all that money and buy one.
Yeah. And buy what you need.
That's less mouths to feed. That's less time that I'm down here. And I mean, I do this just like as a hobby for now. So like the more I can condense and amplify the projects, the better. So the last 2 years, that's what I've been doing. I mean, from this year, the only stuff that I've held back so far is some like blackhead hypo het puzzle stuff. And then I may end up keeping, like, I've got like a Powerball het DG female that I hatched out that is just like a pig. And so I might keep her. A couple DG combos, I might keep those. But for the most part, I've got the same idea this year where if I can condense five snakes into one and just have it work for my projects better, I'll do that. It's going to be less time, less overhead, less rats, all that.
Yeah, 100%. That's smart thinking for sure. So Let's segue a little bit into like the breeding process itself, right? So getting to the hatchlings, obviously. So like, talk about like what the typical season looks like for you.
This last year, it seems like everybody, including myself, everything went late. So my stuff went pretty late. And then I will typically start pairing like late October, early November.
Okay.
But last season, I didn't have anything start moving on the ultrasound until like late January.
Okay.
It depends. I kind of just like read the female. Like if she goes 2 weeks and she's not eating, and then I see her up at the front of the tub, even if she's still at between like 8 and 10 millimeters, I'll put a lock on her. And then I just won't put another lock on her until I see movement. So I see her go up to like 15, 16, then I'm like, okay, we'll get another lock then. But I'm not holding out for a lock by any means. So I'm not just going to like sit and let a female get up to 15 on her own without any type of stimulation. I don't really know that like the intro lock is a real thing. But I mean, what could it hurt if a male is spaced out properly and is, you know, eating well? Then basically I've kind of had the mindset this year where everything that I've got, I'm giving a starter lock, because the males that I've got this year are 1,000 grams and eating really well. So I got a starter lock on most of everything in here. The week after I got back, so I've ended St. Louis and I started pairing right after that. And, I did all my initial pairings. I've got like 2 or 3 more to do. And then I'll ultrasound around Christmas and see where everybody's at. And then the females that have gone past, you know, 14 mil, then they'll get, like a next round of locks. And I put a lock on a female in the beginning to, you know, essentially get her started, if that is a thing. And then I'll put another one around like 15 to 17 mil. And then I'll put one more between like 23 and 25. And then after that, I'm done. If it's like a younger male, like if it's like a first time male and I've only got like 1 or 2 locks on a female, I will put a third on her if she's around like 27 to 30. But anything after 30, I typically don't put a lock on a female after that.
So you go for about 3 locks total?
Yeah. Most of my clutches last year came off of 2.
Most of them. Okay.
Because it was last year was the first year that I had an ultrasound.
But that was with the older males though, right? The 2 locks?
Yes. Yes. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. With an older male. If it was a younger male, I'd probably aim for 3, although it just probably just comes down to the male. But 2 well-timed locks, and I had 2 slugs out of probably somewhere in the ballpark of 60 eggs. So I was like 2 well-timed locks with mature males, I think, is really all you need. With a younger male, maybe 3. I don't really see the value in pairing a female every month, every 4 weeks on the dot for 4 months in a row. But that also comes in with having the ultrasound, so having the tools at your disposal or learning to palpate.
What ultrasound do you use?
I have the Contech.
Okay, yeah. Shout out to the Contech.
Yeah. And CineLoop. Everybody forgets about CineLoop.
Yeah, yeah. I learned about CineLoop. So I got that tool in my toolkit for this coming season, but I didn't know about it until like after I was done ultrasounding for the year.
Yeah, man. I don't have to bug the wife to come down here and press buttons while I scan snakes.
Yeah, I still might do some bugging, but
that makes it more fun.
But yeah, yes, man. I don't know like how I would have gotten by without the ultrasound. I mean, I'm sure I would have, but it would have been like a lot different experience, because like having the ultrasound and being able to see what goes on inside and kind of like know instead of like guessing and just me being uncertain because I'm being so new, like that probably would have like just made me just like overly fixated on whether or not something was happening and am I doing this right. So yeah, the ultrasound really helped, just kind of like,
and you can match the behavior with it. So it's like you can match the behavior with a female where it's like, okay, she's laying up front for the last 2 weeks. Okay, where's she at? And then she'll be like heat seeking afterward. Okay, where is she at? And then, so it's like, okay, she's gone off food. It's been 2 weeks. She's gone off food. Where is she at? So I go, okay, this female goes off food at 22 mil. Okay, yeah. This female goes all food at 17 mil. So it's like year after year, you learn your females. And this year I'm to the point where it's like, I have an ultrasound a couple just because I just know, like, I know what schedule you're on. And I know based on your feeding patterns, I know based on how you're laying in the tub. I know based on just like your general behavior, where you're at, because for the last year I was scanning her so often and, you know, matching it with how she was acting.
So when your girls are building and their appetites increase, do you give them like extra meals? Like how you go about that?
Yeah. So I breed on my own rats. So I've got plenty at my disposal. If a female is, and it really comes down to the female a lot of times too, because I feed pretty much once a week. It really just depends on what day I end up going and cleaning the rat barn. So it might be every 5 days. It might be every 9 days. But for the most part, if I've got females that I know are building really heavy and are like coming at me at like over and over again when I'm opening the tub, I'll feed them. Like I've got one female, she'll eat once a week. And then she'll go off food like in the off season for a little bit. She just doesn't really eat too much. She might eat like every 3 weeks, every other week or something like that. But when she's building, she's building. So she'll take three smalls, and then a week later, she'll take three or four smalls. And then a week after that, she'll take two, and then she'll be chill for 2 weeks. And then after that, she's typically around like 17 to 20 mil. And then she'll take another like one a week, and then she's done. And then she'll go on and ovulate.
Gotcha.
So it really comes down to the female. But if they look like they want to eat and they're coming out the tub at me, I'm going to offer them food. Because if they're telling me they need the calories, then I'm going to give them the calories.
Yeah, it's some, man. Like, I got this one girl, like, just a plain old, like, Mojave hypo girl. Like, she is nuts. And you can tell when she's building, and she builds, like, so quick. But, yeah, as soon as you open the tub, like, you got to open it. Like, you got to be on your guard because she's coming out that tub. Like,
oh, I use a hook.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
do.
Not saying. I use a hook.
I use a hook, open the tub, stand back, because I know it's coming.
Yeah.
And I'm not quick enough to dodge it every time without the hook.
That's the only one that's ever got me. The only adult in here that's ever tagged me was that female that I was talking about. She's a fire hypo and she's big, and she flies out of the tub mouth open. And if I don't use a hook, she just catches whatever is in her area. Luckily, when she grabbed me, she realized real quick that it's not a rat and let go of me. But it spooked me enough where it's like I ordered a hook that night.
Yeah, I see Matt in the chat, because I actually got that Mojave hypo girl from him. And yeah, like, and she builds like crazy. Like, she, I think it was like 10 months in between clutches, like about both times, like 10 months. Like, she's just on it. Yeah, nice. I love that girl.
that's my favorite gene is hypo.
Yeah, I love hypo. So I was gonna ask you earlier, but I want to put you on the spot, and I forgot a little bit too. Hypo versus Desert Ghost, like single gene, which one?
Single gene versus single gene hypo as an adult. And it comes down to like certain combos and especially what you want to do in a project. Because like there's probably certain combos where I would lean one way or the other. But for the most part, I'm probably like 60-40 hypo.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, it's some combos, like DG looks better in it than hypo looks in it. But it's a lot that hypo looks better than DG. But I like them both, and it's like neck and neck. And it's just really kind of like the combo, the example, like all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
I lean towards hypo for sure.
I love it. And I'm so happy to see it having a resurgence, dude. Because when I first got back in, it was like I kept dogging myself because it was like I keep wanting to buy all these hypos, and I'm gonna be like, these are like the cheap recessive. This is a cheap project to get into. It was like, at a certain point, I don't care. It's like I like looking at them. So that's what I want to have.
Yeah.
100%. But now it's going back up. I mean, I think it took the like double and triple recessive craze really to bring it back to the forefront, because when you start stacking hypo into these double recessives and triple recessives, it makes it so much better for the most part. Depends on the project, of course, but
oh yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I got us a little bit off track. I want to finish talking a little bit about your like breeding process. So incubation, are you, well, A, what temps are you keeping your incubators at?
I do. The bottom will read like 88.6 and the top will read like 88.9. I actually dropped a degree this year because I found that I was using like little like GoV sensors in each of the tubs. And I had a tub that had 9 eggs in it. And by the time it was on like day 45, I think it was, it got up to like 91.4. And so I just dropped the whole incubator by a degree just because I'd rather have a tub of 6 be sitting at 88.1 and the tub of 9 be sitting at 89.9 or something like that, rather than having that little bit of a spike. Although I don't know how much that would affect it. It just kind of made me feel safer doing it. So I think I'm actually going to be switching incubators. I'm building out a new one just because it'll let me have some more clutches in it. But the last one I had set right at 89, and it kept between 88 and 89 from top to bottom. And on that one, I just had it was like a restaurant, like glass refrigerator.
Okay.
And I just ran heat tape down the sides, across the bottom, and up the other side, and had a computer fan at an angle going down in there. And I had great luck with it. I didn't have any problems with it for the last 2 years.
Okay. So do you cut or no cut?
I wouldn't say I'm against cutting, but I kind of would say, I guess I just don't see the point. I cut 2 eggs this year, and that was only because when I got the clutches out of the incubator, there was probably 2 or 3 snakes that were already out of the egg, and the rest had been cut, and there was like 1 left. And that was the same situation for 2 clutches. So I snipped that last one, and it just seemed like it was like a slower developing snake. But my second year, I cut a clutch that was on day like 52 or 53, just because I was being impatient. And I instantly regretted it, just because it was like they still had plenty of yolk to absorb. They were still in their sac. And it was just like, this was only for me. I was only cutting it just because I was selfish and I wanted to see what's in it. It's going to be the same snake in 5 days when it comes out on its own. I'm just going to let it do its thing. So I'm pretty much doing the same thing from now on, where it's like, if there's 1 egg that seems like it's really straggling behind the rest of them, I'll snip it and I'll just make sure everything's cool with it. But for the most part, I let them pip themselves and come out on their own.
Gotcha. Okay. That's what's up. That's what's up, bro. What else was it that I wanted to say about that? I keep like losing my train of thought.
We got time.
It'll come back to me. I guess that's a perfect segue. I'm gonna kick the sponsor video real quick, and then we'll come back and chat some more.
Sounds good.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience ebony and ivory reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and ivory reptiles.
Shout out to the homies, Jason and Matt. Appreciate the support, fellas. We tried to get Matt to sing on the show twice.
I love his jingle, dude.
We're going to get him, though. Next time he's on the show, he got to do it, man. Y'all make sure y'all remind me, too.
No way out.
But, yeah, what I was going to ask you was about, like, challenges in the in the breeding process? Like, if you had to say, like, there was like one or two things that was like challenging about the breeding process, what would those be?
Man, my experience is limited, to be honest, and I feel like I've been pretty fortunate. That really the biggest problems I've had is just pairings that didn't work out. And that's mostly just because it might be a female who is a spotty eater and like only wants to eat mice and only wants to get so big and doesn't want to breed, or it's a male who just for some reason doesn't want to lock up with a female, and that might be the only male in that project that I have to use that female for. For the most part, man, I've just been, my collection's been so small and my like projects have been so like kind of, I don't want to say tight, but I haven't been like spreading things out too much to the point where I've had a lot of experience having issues with any clutches or any pairings or anything. So I feel like I've been pretty fortunate, to be honest.
Nice. That's what's up. That's what's up. So you built up quite a social media following. I know like on IG, like you're like what, 38, 39K. So talk about kind of like your social media strategy and what you do to kind of like get your name out there.
It was luck, to be honest with you. so we had, I actually just got out of Western Hognose, and I plan on getting back into them a little bit later, but I really just wanted to focus on the ball pythons for now, because I just had a small group of the Hognose, and I think it was like 2020 or 2021, either one, but it was like a video of a Hognose baby that I had bought that was sitting in my hand that just looked cute. And my wife, that was when like TikTok started to get popular. And so we were at home during COVID, nothing else to do. I'm buying all these snakes. I'm taking pictures of all these snakes, taking videos of all of them. And so we just took a little video of this snake that was just sitting in my hand. And then she put it up on TikTok and it just blew up. And then most of those followers, honestly, I probably went from like 5,000 followers to like 25,000 followers in a week.
Oh, wow.
And then all it took was like another, just like different reel or, yeah. So like this, the next one was a reel on Instagram when the reels started to become a thing on there. And it was, the same snake just in my hand, just like in a different pose. And then there was another one that I actually took down because my Instagram account was taken down. And I think it might have been because in the video, she was just like, Hognose are super like respondent to stuff on their mouth, because when they're like hunting or like finding food, if they like they feel it with their chin or the side of their mouth, they just grab it. So then she was just in my palm and then just opened her mouth on my palm and was just trying to eat my entire palm. And then you could just see her struggling. And I think that might've got hit for like violence or something like that. So I ended up taking it down, but it was really just like a string of like reels and TikToks that went popular that gained a bunch of followers. So I would like to say I have all these like strategies for social media and all that, but to be honest with you, I take pictures of my snakes and I post them and sometimes they get likes.
Gotcha. So, what did you have to do to get your IG account back? Like, did you have to like appeal it or anything like that? Or did they just
process like? There was when I logged into it for like the first 2 days, it was just like unavailable, like blank screens. And then the third day that I tried to get onto it, it gave me a prompt that was like, your account has been, you know, whatever. If you want to appeal it, then fill this out. And I basically just put a blurb where it's just like, I'm just a dude who breeds snakes. Like, I don't know what would have caused this to go like wrong. And really, I think it was probably the combination of, there's probably people that were reporting that video. There was probably people that were like the one that she was like trying to bite my hand. And then there was people that were probably going into the account and being like, oh, he uses Rex, and then reports that. And then the combination of, I went from however many followers to a lot more in a short period, where it probably just like kind of just set off alarms for the like Instagram people. And so they just took it down. But after I did the appeal, I think it took like a day and a half and it was back up. And luckily I haven't had any problems with it since. So knock on wood.
Nice. Yeah. That's crazy.
That kind of kept me from trying to make videos to go viral. Like, I don't think I put another video up of that hog nose after that, because it was just like, it wasn't worth it. Like, I having like however many, it's like 30 something thousand followers, is like, what matters is the people that are engaging with your social media. And if I get a post that, like, I put up a post, I think yesterday, and it's got like 100 likes on it, but there's like 10 actual snake breeders that are like commenting on it, you know, talking about the actual animal. That's what I'm after. I'm not after a bunch of people that are in, you know, random countries just liking a viral video just because it's a viral video.
100%. Yeah, it's all about engagement and having like a good core audience that's really following you because they actually like value what you do. That's right. Going to be like your bread and butter really on social media.
Yeah,
definitely. Quality over quantity for sure. So what other types of things are you doing to kind of like get your name out there?
This? I'm starting to do some more shows too. For the first 2 years, I really didn't have like the inventory to really warrant doing shows. But like this weekend, I'm doing the Cincinnati show. Next month, January, I'll be doing the Indianapolis show. I probably do the Indianapolis show more than any others just because I have friends over there. So I'm friends with, Ryan Hayes is 3-1 South. And okay. Then, Baker Sturgeon is a Bee Sturgeon, Reptiles. So I go out there to vend, but also just to hang out with the friends that you know, live 2 hours away that I get to go see. And then I just recently did the NARBC St. Louis one. But for the scale that I'm at, just doing a couple shows a year is really the extent of what I need. But the like networking side of it too, a lot of it's really done in the Patreon groups. And it's like, yeah, it's like a paid service. I mean, you get it back in credits whenever you buy stuff, but like all that really does is unlock a ton of group chats with people who I can just talk about snakes with all day. That way my like real life friends who aren't like snake friends don't have to hear me ramble on about some like alien language about ancient in a spot-nosed calico that they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%. I need to do better about like jumping in the Discord chats. I don't do a good job of that at all.
Oh, I mean, it's time consuming. You can get lost in them.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And like I'll look up, cause like I try to get in there like 2-3 times a day, but I'll get busy and then I won't go in there. Like my default is like IG and like Messenger. And yeah. So I'll pop in there, but I should be more active, but it's just kind of hard to find the time sometimes, like especially during the day. So,
half the time I go in there and I'll just like, I'll read the last like 3 hours of messages and being like, that's cool. And then I gotta go do something. So it's like, I'm not contributing and you know, I'm taking it all in, which is nice because there's a lot of like good information that's being shared in there, but you know, you can't always be as active as you want to be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so the show circuit, sounds like there's a good bit of shows kind of in your general vicinity. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in Ohio specifically. The first reptile show is the Columbus show. And that they're still going. And that's probably one. I mean, it's 1.5, 2 hours from me. And they actually just added a whole extra building. So they've been at the same like fairgrounds for a while and they've had one building and then the one across from it was just kind of, I don't know if it was ever empty or if they were renting it out to other people, but they've added a whole other building. So I think it doubles their footprint. So it's been a while since I've been to that one, but that might be one that I add to the roster as well, especially once like after this year, I'll have more than 10 clutches. So I'll have more that I'll be able to take to a show, but I like the Cincinnati show. That's been around for a long time. And then the Indianapolis show, I started doing that one, last year and I really like that show as well. And that's the one that's put on by ARS.
Okay. So I didn't realize they put on a show.
I wish they marketed it more because it's a good show and ARS is a big company.
Yeah.
They can make that a huge show. And I get like, that's work. But that show is done, I think 7 or 8 times a year, which is
good
because the monthly shows, there's a ton of value for, especially people who are coming to get feeders and supplies and all that. And it's, you know, it's dependable, but a lot of it is the same stuff every time. So that's why like shows like the NARBC shows or the shows that are once a year or just a few times a year draw more of a crowd and have more value, in my opinion, as a vendor, just because you're going to have more draw and it's not going to be the same thing every time. And that's not to downplay like the shows that are monthly, because those are obviously very important, but shows I think I kind of put on the back burner for a while, just because carting the snakes around, I don't really like doing that to them. I don't like going and throwing them under lights for a full day, and then I've got to treat everything going in and coming back, and that's just added stress on them. Where it's also to the point where if I go and I stand and like work behind a table for 6 to 8 hours, and then I make a couple $100, it's like I'd rather have that time with my wife and be able to do stuff that I need to do and not have the snakes go through all of that in and out process. So, I mean, it's a juggling act. As I grow, it'll have a lot more value, I'm sure, because I'm not just going to be a small table with 15 animals on it. So I think over time I'll have a lot more draw to the shows, and I would like to do like, I don't want to be one of these every weekend show warriors, but if I could do like one show a month, I'd be very content with that, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The kind of target number that I set for shows is probably like 6 shows a year. And so kind of like every other month kind of average. That's probably my sweet spot.
Yeah. Yep. And it depends on the time of the year too. Because if it's like summer, where it's like, I would really like to do the Schaumburg show, the NARBC show, but in July, I don't have anything. Like that's when my clutches are being laid. I might have something from the last season, but it's not going to warrant a $400 table.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so, how do you treat your snakes? Like when you bring them back in, like what are you doing?
So I do the alpha dry bedding in the displays. Mm. When I go to the show, I spray the bedding with like the, right now I'm just using the the Miracle brand, the reptile spray.
Reptile spray, yeah, I know. Yeah. Like so in a beige bottle or whatever.
What is it?
In like the beige bottle or whatever.
Yeah, it's like beige and orange.
Yeah,
and then so I'll treat the bedding, and then whenever they come back, I treat like I'll spray like a paper towel, and I'll just rub the snake down, and then put them back. Obviously, I'll dump the water in their tub for the next day. That way, they don't get in there and drink that. But the one that I'm going to be buying next, I don't know what it's actually called. I know the brand is Taurus. And if you dilute it with a third of a cup and a gallon of water, then it's safe to dip the snake in, so fully. So rather than just like rubbing them down and hoping that you get like the, you know, every inch of the snake, it's an actual dip. And then you can also make that into a spray with the same thing. So that's what I'll be buying next. It's probably going to be a little bit more cost efficient rather than buying like a marketed reptile mite spray. But I had... It's probably a year and a half ago, I did a show, and then I came back with everything, and everything went into a separate room. So luckily it wasn't bad, but I probably had like 10 snakes on the table. And then it was a week later, and I saw a mite on one of the snakes. I'm like, I know exactly where that came from. And then after that, I was just like, I'm treating everything like as they go into this place. Like I spray the bedding like right before they go. I'll do it like the morning of, before I take everything there, and then I put everything into display at the show. And then I'm just not like, I'm not playing with that. Like it's, if I'm going to be going through the work of doing a show, I don't want to have to go through the work of have to manage a mite outbreak from like taking something back from the show. It's not worth it.
Not at all. Not at all. Like that'll be nuts. Like it break out through your whole collection, and then you got to like deal with all the animals and. Yeah, that would be crazy.
I'm real picky about the snakes, man. I don't let people hold them.
That's like one of my worst fears, man. It's like mites.
Yep, it's scary, dude, and it's a lot of work to get rid of it. It just like it messes with your mind more than anything.
I got a black dot on my arm, and sometimes that shit scares me. I'm like, is that on my?
That's why I have no bananas in the collection. I can't have that mental stress.
Hey, it's crazy, man. I definitely don't want to deal with that. Not at all. Not at all. All right, bro. So what about like work-life balance? Like you mentioned, you're getting busy and stuff like throughout the day. Do you find that to be a challenge, or you feel like you got it where you need it?
It can be. Right now, I think I've got it where I need it. Whenever I have this next season where I could potentially double the clutches that I have, then I think that'll take a little bit more managing. But right now, it's not too bad. I mean, I come down here in the mornings and I give everything a once over real quick. And then I use like little like pins for everything. So if I go through in the morning and it's like, okay, I want to clean that when I get back, or like that one's got like dirty water or something, or like on the baby rack, like one of them like tipped their water or something, I can mark stuff. That way when I come back home, I know what I'm coming in to do, rather than having to come through and just like check everything over again. So at minimum, everything gets checked over once a day. And then when I come home, it's typically like an hour in the evenings where I'm just like managing what I need to do. And that's like my regular maintenance. And then feeding night, I also will like spot clean as I feed. So like the babies, I'll put in like rat pups and clothes, rat pups and clothes, rat pups and clothes. But like the adults, even with a small rat, I make sure I'm washing. So I'll take a tub, I'll put the rat in, and then I'll wait for it to hit if it does. And then I'll like pull it out and check just to make sure they're not getting like a bite on the neck or anything whenever I put them in. And I'll spot clean at the same time. So I'm trying to be as efficient as possible. That way, whenever I come down here in my free time, a lot of it is like brainstorming pairings, or, you know, organizing a little bit better, or like trying to figure out how I can make things more efficient. So right now it's a real manageable balance. And I think it's just going to take like scaling it over the last like couple years. I've added a certain number of snakes every year to the point where I know I'm not going to, you know, overwhelm myself, because the last thing I want to do is lack on animal care. And if it ever got to that point, then I'm condensing, because I won't let myself get to the point where I'm not like treating the animals how they should be treated.
Collection size wise, where are you at right now, including everything?
I think I've got like the main collection is probably around like 60 to 70. And okay. Then there's probably 30 babies. And then there's like five up in quarantine. So it's real manageable. It's probably like ballpark around 100.
Okay.
After this year, I really don't have a ton of holdbacks. Like I said, most of them are just going to be like hypo het puzzle stuff. And then I'll probably add a couple things here and there, but for the most part, I'm holding off until I make some more clutches this coming season, just to use that income towards whatever I buy. Same mentality. It's going to be condensing five snakes, using that money, buy one. Same thing with, which is keeping numbers low, but the quality high.
Yeah.
So I don't see myself having a collection that surpasses 200 animals. And a lot of that is the space that I'm in and doing it part time. So if anything ever were to change and I ended up doing this full time, that may change. But for now, I think having maybe 70 adult females and being able to pick and choose who I'm breeding each year, go for 25 to 30 clutches, that seems like it'd be my sweet spot. Obviously I say that without having the experience of having 25 to 30 clutches, but that's what I think I would land at.
So future state, in terms of like it becoming like a business or more full time, do you ever think that's in the cards, or are you just kind of like seeing how it goes?
Really, I'm just seeing how it goes. I'm to the point now where it's like I have a good job, and if this ever gets to a point where it greatly surpasses that, then that would be something I would consider. But it's not something that I'm like scratching at trying to get it to replace my income, because the last thing I want to do is have to rely on the snakes to replace my income to live.
Gotcha. And so like, what would be your advice for like a new ball python breeder, like coming into the market now?
Pick and choose wisely, because right now you can get really good prices on project animals. Like, not just like there's a lot of people that are like selling off like the fluff of their collection. But if you have a project in mind, and this is something that I would probably change for myself if I were to go back, I've got so many different projects. It's just like, I've got a pocket of animals for Tri-Stripe Hypo. I've got a pocket for animals for DG Clown and a pocket for DG Pie. Where it's like, if I went back and I just focused on like people that do like DG Hypo Clown. Like DG Hypo Clown is a mainstay that people are going to work their entire collection around. If I could go back and just kind of like focus in on something and making sure whenever I'm buying stuff now that it's going to fit into that project long-term, rather than being like, oh, that's a good deal on a cool snake, I'll buy that. Because yeah, you'll probably breed something to it and it may be a cool clutch. But if you have like your project mind early on and you're strict on yourself about what you're buying in the beginning, you can go so much further because you're going to have like the building blocks for specific projects early on rather than waiting 3 years to make those building blocks.
100%. Like that's where I stepped in it early on as far as like the project mindset. Like I wasn't thinking really in terms of like projects, at least not from like a long-term perspective. Like I was just kind of like, oh, this is cool and I can get this and this and I can make that. But I went thinking like long game. And so once I started thinking long game, that's when I start like making changes, like in the collection, selling some stuff, being like more strict with what I hold back and more strict with what I buy and stuff like that. And so like now I'm trying to think more so on like a project in long terms and how it's going to work and like what, like you said, what works well together, like long term. I think that's a good way to go. And as far as like getting in right now, we were talking about this the other day too. Like right now is like a good time to get in. Like, believe it or not, like even though the market's slow, this, that, and the third, right now is a great time, like you said, to get like some really powerful animals at a really good price and like really set yourself up. And then on top of that, there's all kinds of information out there with people just like telling people like the way it's done. I mean, we got shows like all the podcasts and people sharing knowledge on the podcast. Like all these people got like YouTubes and Patreons. And so it's like, you can skip a lot of stuff in terms of like the line of growth or whatever, just by like paying attention and being smart with it. So right now is really a good time to get in if you're trying to do it like long-term.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And then like when I was like picking up a lot of my project animals, I was picking it up at the buy high stage too. So
yeah, I did quite a bit of that too. Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Shout out to people who get into it right now and like and thinking smartly about it for real.
Yeah.
So what are your general thoughts, like outlook about like the industry just in general, kind of like at the macro level?
Macro level, I think, I mean, like, we all know it's slow right now, but how many times has it gone up and down? Like, I wasn't around for the dips. I mean, the, like, 2017, 2018 is what I hear everybody talk about, like, the last, like, real dip was, and that's right when I got in. So, like, I don't have the experience of riding that, but, I mean, so many people, other people have said it the same way. Like, this industry is like it's a luxury injury. So if people are struggling to like make ends meet and having a hard time with the general economy, they're not going to be buying snakes. So like my whole mindset is like, this is the first year where most of my pairings I'm like amped for holdback wise. Because the last 2 years was like, I know I'm going to make good snakes, but most of them in my mind is like, I know I'm probably going to sell most of them because I want to like use that money to buy into the projects. Now's the year where I've got the actual project snakes that are finally going for me. So if I end up with, you know, 15 clutches and I hold back most of them, I'm totally happy. So like if it goes another year where it's like kind of a low period, then, you know, I'll stock those. And that will like when everything picks back up, I'll be very well positioned to be able to have, you know, my collection, you know, elevated. And it's also like what you're making. Like, I don't want to like downplay any like projects, but if you're making like simple combos that are like, if you go on Morph Market and you put the filter at like $500 and up, it goes from like what, 46,000 to 8,000?
8,000 or so, yeah.
Having a like 30 to 40,000 animals that you're competing against, if you're making snakes that are under $500, that's a hard gig. So like if you obviously like takes money to get in and to like have the those initial projects, and a lot of those animals are building block animals. But if you're setting yourself apart and you're having your own projects and those animals are $500 and up, you're competing with a lot less people and you're going to draw more attention for very specific projects rather than making the same thing that there's, if somebody can buy 50 to 100 of the same combo on Morph Market, that's a lot harder to stand out. Whereas if there's only you and a couple other people that have the same thing available. So like make yourself stand out with your projects is essentially it.
100%. 100%. Did you say you were shed testing earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. I've shed tested quite a bit. I have probably another like load that I need to send to Charlie. I've been sending everything to Gray Rider, and I've got some good results. The only one that came back negative that honestly like actually bummed me out, I bought a before the hypo test was available, I bought a male Mojave Sunset Posset hypo, and he proved not het hypo, so that bummed me out. But for the most part, I've had very good luck with my stuff proving out, and it's helping, man, because it's like if I've got males, like two of my males this year were posset hypo before I put them in with a female, and they were adults. So I send the shed off and they test positive, like, okay, now your like schedule of females is locked in, and I'm not trying to like make double hets now. So now I'm making hypo het DG combos. I'm making hypo het tri-stripe rather than making like double hets and starting from the beginning. So it's been very, very valuable to me. And it's gonna help too with the holdbacks. So I've got some double or het puzzle, pos het hypo, pos het pides. So I've got like a group of females that are all that, and I need to test those out. I probably won't, honestly, probably won't test them for pied. I'll probably just have that like as a bonus. Like the hypo is like the kicker for me, what I would really want. But another surprise het, I have a pastel puzzle that was het hypo, and he proved out het pied. I made a leopard, might be OD, but a leopard pie het puzzle, pos het hypo with him on accident from a head that proved out. But yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I got like five or six right now waiting. I'm waiting on one more girl to shed, like from a clutch. It was a clutch with four girls and they were all produced by, that male that would prove to be het pied.
Oh, and so nice.
I'm waiting on like the last girl to shed, 'cause I'm testing all of them for pied.
Nice. What are they? What are the combos?
So it's a leopard yellow belly, right now double head DG clown posset pod, a spot nose yellow belly inchy clown head DG posset pod, and a inchy leopard yellow belly head DG posset pod, and then a inchy leopard clown head DG posset pod. I was going to sell one of those, but then I pulled her off once I found out that she might be het pied.
And so yeah.
Until I know what's going on.
Those are all females?
All females. It was like a 48, nice, all females.
Oh, yeah. Get those pie tests back and then put those in the shelf, man.
Exactly. Those exactly. Nice. So I hope at least two of them or more come back like het pied.
Yeah.
If they come back het pied, for sure keep them. I mean, three of them I'm probably for sure keeping. One I might sell if it doesn't come back het pied, but if she comes back het pied, I'm keeping her for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably won't work like that one inchy yellow belly spot nose clown female. If she proves het pied, I probably won't work pied just because of like the high white spot nose pods. Probably won't work it. So I'm hoping it's in some of those other girls. But I'm thinking it might be her though. I'm thinking she might be het pied because of like the ringer she's got.
Okay,
She's probably hit pied too. We'll see.
Have you seen a spot nose enchi pied?
Spot nose enchi pied? I can't think of one right off the top of my head.
I don't think I've seen one either. I feel like one has to have been made. Like I mean, most spot nose pieds are all white, if not, you know. But the I've seen a couple spot nose pies that have like kind of like not the same as special, but you know how special pies sometimes will have like a partial head pattern or like just like a partial neck pattern. I've seen some spot nose pies that have something similar to that. And I've always wondered, like, does a spot nose super enchy clown pie look the same as that, like low white? Or is like, I don't feel like that would fight that hard against like a super enchy pie, but I don't know. I've never seen one.
Yeah, I hadn't seen one either. At least not one that I can remember. But yeah, that's interesting to think about. I don't know. Someone will make it. Play with it. Yeah, I'm going to have to look for it now to see if there's one out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, man, that's really the cool thing. It's just like thinking the projects through, thinking about what you want to do long term, and then figuring out the most efficient way to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the fun part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It definitely keeps my mind going. For sure. For sure. Cool, man. So before we let you get out of here and enjoy the rest of the night, I do got some random questions for you.
Yeah.
And so we'll start the first one. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Honestly, I'm not very well traveled yet.
Me either.
I would like to say some type of like island, but I wouldn't know. Honestly, if I were in this hypothetical able to like take family and friends with me, I'd probably live like Tennessee, to be honest. Okay. I like the weather there. I like having seasons, but not being as cold as Ohio can get sometimes. Probably Tennessee, if not probably like the Carolinas. Okay. That's like growing up, whenever we would take vacations, we would go to like South Carolina, and I really like it down there. So it probably either South Carolina or Tennessee.
Nice, nice. Yeah, the Carolinas is a dope spot for sure.
It's just humid.
It says humid?
It's humid, yeah.
Oh, it's nothing compared to Florida.
Oh, yeah. That's a different world. That's
a different kind of humidity. It was funny because Lordy Lyon said on Key's show the other day, like a couple weeks back, he's like, man, I got off the plane, it felt like opening the door to my incubator.
That's yeah. Funny. Oh, dude,
that's funny. But that's exactly how it feels in Florida, man. The humidity is crazy. I mean, it's good right now because it's cold outside, but man, that summer. Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So if you won $10 million tomorrow, how would you use it?
I'd pay off all debt. And then the initial, I'd probably buy like a decent size property where I could either build a house or have a house on it and then have like a separate snake facility. I don't mind having the snakes in the house, but I would like to have eventually like an outbuilding for the snakes and the rats as well. I'd obviously invest into the snakes. So I'd probably put a cool $1 million into the snakes. And then the rest of it, I would find some way to invest and make money passively on it. Eventually would be getting into real estate and then putting it into some type of accounts where I can have it make money for me. I'd probably try to, you know, I'd obviously relocate and have a better house, but I would probably try to still kind of live the same type of lifestyle and just let that money accrue for the long term.
Yeah, and just live off that and set your generations up after you as well.
Yeah.
Dope, dope. So if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
All right. Number one is a gimme, Steve Irwin.
Okay.
Just because like, I was obviously like I said, I was obsessed with dinosaurs when I was a kid, but that was mostly just like looking at books, thinking they were cool. But Steve Irwin being able to like see him on television doing stuff with all of these, animals that I always thought was so fascinating growing up was like game changing for me. And, second would be, Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, nice.
So I'm a basketball fan, but he's also hilarious. And he's also got a ton of businesses. So for him, I want to be like, okay, like, yeah, you did like the NBA thing, but like, what was your path with like adding all the businesses? Because he's on every commercial. He owns so many different type of businesses. Like down the street, he has a Big Shack's Chicken. That's a and it's dope. But I would want to know like what his like career was like and how he scaled all of those. Because when like he's got so much going on, I want to know like what part he has in all of those and what it took to kind of like ramp all of that up in the beginning stages. And then the third would be like not necessarily a specific person, but somebody who does like wildlife photography and like videos. So like we always see like the Netflix, like the nature documentaries, like Our Planet type stuff like that. We always see like the 10-second clip that's perfect of the animal coming in, doing its thing, and then it goes out or whatever it is. But we don't see like the buildup, the 3 weeks of work that goes into like getting that shot. I don't know wherever I heard it. I think it was actually that show Our Planet, but there's a scene where they were like filming albatrosses that were like landing on an island. And they were on like a ship or something, and they were like, they're trying to go out to get a better shot. So they took a rubber raft out to try to get closer to the island that the albatrosses were on. And the rubber raft was attacked by tiger sharks.
Oh,
and
wow.
They tore up the raft and all of this. So it's like, we see all this tiny little clip that looks perfect and cinematic, but we don't see all the like work that goes into it. So like that person, I would want to know like the craziest stories and like work you had to go through to get these clips that we probably take for granted seeing it on TV.
Gotcha. Do you do any like sort of videography or photography? Like on a,
I wish.
Yeah, I wish I was a lot better at that.
What's that?
I said, I wish I was a lot better at that.
Yeah, no, I'd say I'm decent at taking photos of snakes in a tub, but anything other than that, I'm not too good.
Yeah, I'm starting to learn like some of the basics, but I got a long, long, long way to go.
Yeah, I would like to eventually get like a full like camera setup, not necessarily just for the snakes, but just like general use. Because right now it's just like using an iPhone, it works well, but it's not the same. Like you see like Leviathan and then like Brandon Nixon, their type of like videos, like using the camera setups they have, they look so nice.
Did you watch that documentary?
Yeah, that was good. They did it really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I messaged them and said, like, if you can do it, like, if this was your first, like, attempt at, like, a documentary thing, there is so much, like, potential, even with just within this industry for, like films for them to do.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the first crack at it. Like, just imagine, like, 5-10 documentaries down the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they're really good too, and like they do a good job like playing off each other and whatnot. But yeah, I definitely want to go check that out again. I watched it last weekend, but I'm gonna watch it a couple more times.
Yeah,
you know, those guys
I watched it during the debut, but I need to watch it again. It was very good.
Yeah, yeah, they did a really, really good job. Yeah, I'm gonna watch it a couple more times. Like I said. What did he say? They make you not want to post videos.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to tuck my video in.
I get in my head about that, man, because it's like, I feel like I see all this like crazy stuff. And honestly, like, I'll get back from Tinley or like one of the big shows, and it's hard not to like come down into my small room and be like, dude, this is nothing. But then it's like, then you get in your head, it's like start comparing yourself to other people where it's like, you, if you're only in for so long, you're only in for so long. You don't compare yourself to the people that have been in here for 10, 15 years. It's like, do your own thing. Post your snakes. Be proud of what you've got and what you built. Like it's hard not to take some stuff for granted sometime, but it takes kicking your own butt to make sure you're appreciating what you've got.
Yeah. Only compare yourself with yourself, right? That's the only person. Like if you better than what you were, then you're making progress, but not comparing yourself to like outside folks. Like comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep, exactly.
But yeah, bro, it's been amazing tonight. I really enjoyed chatting it up with you, man. And like I said, I've been looking forward to it all week. I knew you're gonna be a great guest. Before we get out of here, is there anything you want to tell folks about things to expect? Let everybody know like where to follow you on social media, like the whole nine.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate you having me. Like I told you, I love your show, so I'm happy to come on. Everybody can follow me. It's everything is KMB Reptiles. My link tree that's in my Instagram bio will take you to everything else, take you to Morph Market. I've only got a limited number of animals on there, but after the show this weekend, I'm going to go back through and get everything that's available posted up that comes back from the show. Right now, it's simple stuff, to be honest with you. I've got some like Krypton Het DG stuff, some Pied Het DG stuff. This coming season, a lot of it's going to be like Hypo Het puzzle combos, hopefully some visual hypo puzzles. Same thing with tri-stripes. I'm going to have some like hypo het tri-stripes and then hopefully some double visual hypo tri-stripes. And then I'll have some more DG pied stuff. So this will be the first year where I've got shots at the double visual. So a little bit of a variety. So, you know, if anybody sees anything they want, hit me up. But other than that, man, that's me. I'm just here to breed snakes and have fun and hang out with cool people.
Nice, nice. Yeah, you got a lot of dope stuff in the works, man.
Thank you.
Definitely, definitely. I love those projects for sure. Everyone in the chat, man, I appreciate y'all coming through. Appreciate the support week in and week out. We're going to have a show on Saturday night as well. We don't typically have shows on Saturday night, but we will have a show on Saturday night. We got Stone Age Pythons in the building. And then the following Saturday, we're having another Saturday show. We got Troy from Balls and Strikes Pythons. So we got like two extra episodes this month. So definitely be sure to check that out. And then like next Thursday, we got Jersey Balls. So we got a loaded month. So y'all make sure y'all check all that out. Gonna have a lot of fun this month, man. Again, bro, I appreciate you coming out. I appreciate everybody in the chat for coming through, showing love. Shout out to everyone on the replay gang. Shout out to the audio only gang. Appreciate the support each and every week. Thank y'all for coming out. Be blessed. Peace.
Thank y'all.